produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. Underground pot economy is a major contributor to local economy, University of Colorado economist finds. The underground marijuana trade in El Paso County, Colorado, which includes the city of Colorado Springs, is a major contributor to the local economy, according to the findings of a research economist at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. The UCCS study, conducted at the behest of the Colorado Springs Business Journal, estimated that the marijuana trade in Colorado Springs alone generates $80 million in annual revenue. The study further suggests that the average marijuana consumer in Colorado Springs purchases about 3 ounces of pot annually, at a cost of about $1,000. About 41 pounds of marijuana is sold in Colorado Springs every day, researchers charged. According to federal data provided by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, approximately 80,000 citizens of Colorado Springs smoke marijuana. Based on an input-output analysis of local marijuana retail sales conducted by UCCS, the current underground marijuana trade, if legal, would create 1,100 new jobs, create $29.83 million in annual income, and yield $1.76 million in sales tax collection. On Tuesday, Colorado voters will decide on Amendment 44, the Alcohol Marijuana Equalization Initiative, which would eliminate all state criminal and civil penalties for the possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana by adults age 21 or over. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We're continuing our coverage of the very important ballot initiatives taking place this and next week. Early voting has begun on most of the initiatives, and uniquely in Montana, voters have no pre-registration deadline, and voters in Missoula can take place in the election right on November 7th. Today, we'll speak with proponents for marijuana reform in Santa Barbara, California, and Missoula, Montana, as we visit with the Americans involved with different marijuana initiatives up for a vote next Tuesday. It's important to recognize that many elected officials and current law enforcement personnel have voiced their public support and given their endorsements for marijuana law reform. In Colorado, the sheriffs of Pitkin and San Miguel counties are supporting Amendment 44. In Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the mayor stood up in support of the deprioritization ordinance there last week. And in Santa Barbara, California, a local city councilor, Doss Williams, has shown public support and an official endorsement for Measure P, a municipal ordinance that would make marijuana law enforcement's lowest priority. Joining us today from Santa Barbara is Councilor Doss Williams. Councilor, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to speak with you today, Councilor Williams, and thanks again for joining us. First, why are you endorsing Measure P in Santa Barbara?
Well, because I think there's some crime problems that are much more pressing than the need to punish people for their own recreational use of marijuana.
And how many marijuana smokers are being arrested each year in Santa Barbara?
Well, you know, it's not a large departure from current practice. I think our police department is already de facto deprioritizing marijuana arrests because they're sensitive to this fact. But I still think there's a value to ratifying that in law and making a clear signal to the rest of the community of what those priorities are for a variety of reasons. One of those is simply to destigmatize that. I think that, again, we could name at least 50 problems that are more pressing in the world than to reform people of marijuana use.
Do you hope other cities might look to Santa Barbara for an example in this regard?
Yes. Our tax dollars are a limited quantity. Our resources as a society have limits. We should be concentrating on the real evils of society instead of recreational marijuana use.
Das, you're a younger city councilor, yet what's interesting in speaking to Californians is that there's this cross-generational support for these types of marijuana initiatives.
I'm sure actually the baby boomers would be even more, probably even more supportive of this than most people my age.
And how have the overall Santa Barbara City Council and law enforcement there reacted to Measure P?
Well, I think everybody is on board that either in fact or officially that there should be a deprioritization. I think there is some disagreement about whether that should be something that we talk about or something that we don't talk about. I think that the only reason why you don't have support for Measure P with the whole council is the thought of a little bit of a fear that either dealers will not be dealt with by law enforcement. But I would just remind them and remind the public at large that these measures usually have a provision, and Santa Barbara's measure definitely has a provision where the police officers still have the ability to use their discretion as to what could be possession with intent to sell. And so I think that's still allows for the discretion and the tough calls to be made by our police officers, but still makes it very clear that it's not the will of the people for law enforcement to prioritize marijuana possession.
And Councilor Williams, in your own career and daily life there in California, has encountering medical marijuana patients led you to make the choice here, or is Measure P so cut and dry that it's an easy choice for you?
It's an easy choice, but the element that compassion plays in this, I think, is huge. We're in the midst of a constitutional conflict between the federal government, the state government, and that's the reason why you're seeing these Measure P's. I think under ideal circumstances, this would be something that we handled at a state level, and I think that's also why sometimes you see some reluctance from local elected officials. But we've seen with Proposition 215 that the federal government is not necessarily willing to respect the will of the people in these state initiatives in regards to medicinal marijuana, and so that it is necessary for local governments as the agents of closest to the people to help in this, what is fundamentally a sort of a crisis of what are the powers that have traditionally been at a state level that the federal government is not is trying to take away because they don't like medicinal marijuana, permissive medicinal marijuana laws.
And in talking about this constitutional state versus federal power struggle, do you think that marijuana starts to fall into the realm of being a civil right?
Well, I definitely believe that health care is a human right. That right to medical treatment is a human right. And I don't want to, disrespect the term by maybe mixing it with a couple other things, but it is clear to me that when someone is in pain, dying of a debilitating disease, or even possibly gaining strength by the ability to eat that can come from using medicinal marijuana, in cases when someone is going through chemo and needs to keep on the weight or something like that, that this could be something that is life-saving or at very least eases the pains of death. And so to me, that's something that all Americans can agree on, and I think most Americans do if you go out to the public. I think the problem is not all politicians are willing to follow the people yet on this issue.
And Councillor Williams, do you think that it's easier for local elected officials like yourself to deal with these issues than those involved in larger political landscapes, even state legislators?
It may be simply because they're constantly around their constituents. Most state and federal elected officials are, you know, in Sacramento or Washington throughout the week, and they don't necessarily have the ability to talk with their constituents all the time. So in that sense, it might be easier for us. In the sense of the clear delineation of powers, it's not easier for local elected officials. You know, it should be, these are fundamentally issues that should be solved at a state level and be state powers. But the federal government has chosen to try to defy that and enforce, you know, drug enforcement laws even on legitimate medicinal users. And so in the wake of that, it becomes really complicated. Do you believe the feds? Do you believe, your state elected officials and state law? Well, local governments are officially an arm of state law. And so the law tells us we should be going along with the state. And I think even more important than that, when you're being conflicted between what a state government is telling you and what a federal government is telling you, you should be doing what your conscience tells you to do. And for me, that is to support medicinal marijuana laws and to look that and ensure that the laws that are on the books are not used to thwart the will of the people in regards to those laws.
City Councilor Das Williams of Santa Barbara, California, thanks again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Staff.
Thank you so much for having me.
Measure P in Santa Barbara goes before voters Tuesday, and more information can be found at sensiblesantabarbara.org. Next up today on the Audio Stash, we're going to check in with Angela Goodhope, the campaign coordinator for Initiative 2 in Missoula, Montana, a marijuana deprioritization initiative sponsored by Citizens for Responsible Crime Policy. Angela, welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. It's good to be back.
Thanks again for joining us. And Montana voters have something uniquely available to them, same-day voting, which, unlike most of the country, has a 30-day pre-registration deadline. Voters can participate fully in an election right on Election Day.
Yep, they can go to the second floor of the county courthouse up until, I believe, it's noon and register to vote and vote what you would call absentee right there and then.
Angela, what kind of feedback are you getting on Initiative 2 there in Missoula?
We've had quite a few people send back our endorsement letters with donations, which is really a wonderful thing to get in the mailbox. We've had a really good coming out from people in the university crowd as far as picking up the yard signs and getting them displayed around town. We've had a few letters to the editors published, which that's been good too. So just, you know, a lot of support and conversations.
Angela, I know you've had to deal with some of the same desperate rhetoric from the opposition, mainly local law enforcement, as we've seen in Colorado and in other places.
Well, I hate to use the term reefer madness, but it's similar to that. I actually went to a meeting this morning, and it was just mind-blowing, the fabrications that are coming out of their mouths as far as they'll lose federal funding. And excuse me, one officer was saying that they would face civil lawsuits because they weren't following the law, and I did remind everybody in the meeting that it's a recommendation. It's not mandatory. It's up to the law enforcement community to honor the will of the people, but there's nothing in there that says you have to do this. And I explained to him from a paralegal standpoint, which is what I have some training in, is that an attorney or a judge would need some kind of law to actually reference before they would go after a law enforcement officer as far as a civil suit, and there's just no change to the codes or the statutes. It doesn't change the law at all.
And have these reefer madness statements been surprising? I know I was shocked to see what happened in Denver last week.
Well, you know, in my world, I figured that the truth would be known, and it's, you know, it's a little shocking initially when you hear something totally fanatical and just off the wall as far as interpretation of this initiative. But then again, in retrospect, I think it's always been that way, and I believe a lot of those folks are living their fears, and they're not really rationally approaching it. And they feel rather threatened by the idea of a community oversight committee. There's been a lot of adverse press as far as coming from the county attorney on that one, which is a little frustrating because it's just a way for the people and the law enforcement to work together in a more closer relationship, which I believe in any case is probably a good thing.
It certainly sounds like it will have a positive impact. Tell us about the language of Initiative 2 and remind us how this oversight committee will be put into practice.
According to the initiative, it would be the county commissioners that would appoint the oversight committee. Our intention was, and I already have a list of individuals very interested in participating in it, we would submit a recommendation or just, you know, here's a list of people that wanted to do this. And then 7 months' time from November 7th, if and when it passes, they would be producing their first report, which, as near as I can tell from the initiative, would be easy to implement an additional question or two on the intake form when you are arresting or charging someone with a marijuana-related crime. And then that form would obviously be redacted as far as the personal information that would go to the committee, and then the committee on a quarterly basis or more as needed would tally and track of funding and or spending on the marijuana charges, and also like demographics as to who was arrested, where they were arrested, and also the committee will hear grievances from individuals who feel they were kind of wrongly pursued. But again, there's no change to the law. So there's really not a lot of steps other than the committee can go back to the county and or report to the citizenry on what's happening, what's going on.
Well, with Initiative 2 not actually changing the law, it sounds like some folks are really afraid of further scrutiny and oversight of law enforcement activities. It does beg the question, what's the relationship like between law enforcement and Missoula residents overall right now?
It's kind of polarized, I believe. You've got a huge sect of Missoula community that obviously would be pro this initiative for good reason, and they might feel like I've talked to some people in that type of community, and they feel like it would bring everyone closer together and create more of a sound dialogue between people and maybe undermine some of the fear factor that goes along with someone whose culture involves marijuana. And then you have another side of the spectrum, which I think is where a lot of our opponents are coming from, because there's a lot of people in like drug abuse prevention for children, too, in the high schools that are very afraid that it will increase availability to teens. And they work right hand-in-hand with law enforcement, so then you have both sides of the spectrum. And I've made it clear at the meeting also that in Seattle there was a study done by the University of Washington shortly after I think a year or two after that Initiative 75 went through, and they actually saw a decline in teen use, marijuana use. And also in Prop 215, there was a decline in teen use as well. So it's really difficult to try to battle somebody's thoughts when their thoughts aren't truthful or have no basis. It's just been kind of an uphill battle, because how do you combat something that's completely false? And when you ask them to back it up, they just kind of look at you like, well, I don't know what to say.
Well, Angela, it really sounds like Missoula, like other marijuana reform initiatives, are having broader political impact, putting into place reasons for law enforcement to be more responsible and responsive to their communities.
Right, and the sheriffs, I don't know if they're traditionalists or they're just afraid of more citizens being involved, but they're actually the ones that have funded this opposition as well.
And so these marijuana reform initiatives, they really are pro-law enforcement. Decriminalizing and deprioritizing marijuana is really a pro-cop position.
Well, you know, another story about my meeting this morning, the police officer said, you know, on behalf of the officers in Missoula County, I believe that marijuana is a low priority. And he looked at me and I said, well, then why would you go against this initiative? It endorses and advocates that viewpoint already. You know, it allows you to follow through with what you're saying.
And we've heard this from Santa Cruz and Colorado law enforcement as well, this notion that there's no need for regulations or change in law because law enforcement is somehow de facto making the decision already not to enforce marijuana laws. But we know that that is just not true. We can see very clearly from arrest data that in Missoula, Santa Cruz, and across Colorado and the country, pot smokers are being arrested at a tremendous cost to the state and community.
Yeah, it's up to their discrimination on how they want to spend their day. One statistic I don't think we had come out last time I spoke with you is the fact that if you look at the marijuana arrest rate per capita in Missoula County, we arrest two times as many people as the national average. So then you ask yourself the question, well, is that because more people in Missoula are imbibing or partaking or smoking or what have you? And so we looked at that, and actually Missoula County mirrors the national average as far as people who smoke pot. So we really do need this to go through, and hopefully it'll make a huge difference and make Missoula safer for everybody. Right now we've got, what, 5-6 days to the election, so we just need to keep our nose to the grindstone, be positive, and have a lot of faith and hope that things will work out as they're supposed to.
Angela, I want to thank you again for joining us here today, and I very much look forward to speaking with you next Wednesday.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris, and have a good day.
Angela Goodhope is the campaign coordinator for Citizens for Responsible Crime Policy in Missoula, Montana, where voters can participate in Initiative 2 with no pre-registration next Tuesday. More information can be found with links at normalaudiostash.com. Next up on the Audio Stash today, we have some great Stony music. The High Times 6th Annual Stony Awards was last week at B.B. King's Blues Club in New York City. And on stage to bring some tunes was this band, Herbal Nation. These guys are kicking live, and this was an actual live recording of their set up there at the Stony Awards. This is Love the Herbs, Something Stinks. This is a great track, again, live on stage at the Stony Awards at B.B. King's Blues Club in New York City, a spectacular High Times magazine event. You can link up to Herbal Nation right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
We be blowing toxic, chronic, bonic, blazing, smoking, puffing on that Strictly Bionic.
We be blowing toxic, chronic, panic, blazing, smoking, puffing on that Strictly Bionic.
We be blowing toxic, chronic, panic, blazing, smoking, puffing on that Strictly Bionic.
We be blowing toxic, chronic, panic, blazing, smoking, puffing on that Strictly Bionic.
Yeah, make some noise.
You take your seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Love the earth. We love the earth. You take a little seed, you put it in the ground, and it comes back to me. Mother Earth is fed by the sun.
W-E-E-D.
Weed.
Green leaves, Philly blunts, Dutchess and buds.
Shit, I just love it when I fire it up.
The ganja be good for tuberculosis and good for the root. It was good for your mama.
It's good for me. Some steak and I want some. Some steak and I want some. Some smell like a skunk and I want some. Some steak and I want some.
Hold your blunt in the air, twist it with a bow, and take a throw. Don't choke,
blow the smoke in the wind.
Don't say a chicken never been denied. You can die away and then rip right to puffin'. Puffin' this cold, hydroponically water from
green. Cannabis is free, but leave, I don't feel so
free. I be meaning everything I say.
What?
Every time I'm blazing up a J-C-H-C-P, the reason.
The reason.
12 months straight, be reefer season.
Reefer season.
I got it going from the farmer in the
man.
Running triple beam, turn a versatile pitch all day. I'm strictly stressed, elevated. Don't blaze the shit, I can't take the smell of it. We be smoking weed, getting key, bacon, or Mary Jane taste.
The cakes, huh? Just for the hell of it. Some steak and I want some. Some steak and I want some. Some smell like a skunk and I want some. Some steak and I want some.
That was the group Herbal Nation with that track, Love the Herbs, Something Stinks. That was a live recording at the High Times 6th Annual Stony Awards at B.B. King's Blues Club last week in New York City. We have links to Herbal Nation and their new album at normalaudiostash.com. And in tomorrow's Friday show, we'll have more Herbal Nation stony tracks from the Stony Awards. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMLAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.